"Moving," Danny said in a stern voice, surprising me. Hearing his voice, they both spun around, the man shoving a hand into his pocket. I jumped up, as did Danny. We both lit them up with the lights in our carbines.
"Just keep walking. We don't need your kind here," Danny said.
"Don't shoot! Please don't shoot!" the woman cried.
"Sounds like you didn't have a problem with shooting a minute ago," Danny said.
I called out, "Take your hand out of your pocket, real, real slow, mister." Seeing he was outnumbered, he slowly withdrew his hand.
"We're not looking for any trouble. We'll be on our way."
"What was worth killing a man over?" Danny asked. The woman looked at the man, the fear on her face obvious. Neither of them answered, so Danny shouted the question again, causing them both to jump and the woman to cry.
"Show him! Just show him!" she pleaded with the man.
He slowly took a pack off his back and unzipped it. Reaching in, he withdrew a can and held it out.
"You killed a man over a can of corn?" I asked.
"We didn't mean to,"
the woman cried.
"You killed a man with kids to take that?" Danny asked.
"I didn't want to. It just sort of happened,"
the man muttered.
"Get on your knees," Danny shouted. "Hands on your head."
The woman jumped at the shout, but quickly complied, crying all the while. The man hesitated. I was just as enraged as Danny and shouted at him,
"On your knees or I'll put you in the ground."
He slowly went to his knees and put his hands on his head.
"Cover me," Danny said. "If he moves, shoot his ass."
As Danny started toward them, I stepped forward, my carbine centered on his chest. The man's eyes followed Danny as he circled behind him. Once behind the man, Danny jammed the muzzle of his rifle in his back. You blink, and you're a dead man. Reaching into the man's pocket, he pulled out a small, silver revolver. He quickly padded the rest of his pockets and produced a small handful of bullets. Tucking the pistol in his belt, Danny backed around them and returned to where I was standing. He opened the cylinder of the pistol and inspected it, then extracted one fired case.
"We should just shoot your ass," Danny said.
"Please don't kill us," the woman cried.
"I didn't mean to," the man replied, looking at the ground. "He should have just given it to me."
His shoulders slumped.
"Just do it if you're going to do it."
"Awful brave all of a sudden," Danny said.
"You're not even worth killing. You're the scum of the earth. Just get the hell out of here and never come back," I said.
"You can't send us out without a gun. We'll get killed," the man said.
"Maybe. Maybe you'll come across someone just like yourself. Maybe they'll kill you for something, or for nothing. I don't care," Danny added.
The man looked at the woman with him. Her hair was long but matted and in her face.
"Think of my wife. How can I protect her?"
He paused.
"There are worse things than death."
"You think about that while you walk. Think about some woman and kids you just left down the road with a dead man you just shot."
"Go now," Danny said.
Apprehensively, the woman rose to her feet. The man stood as well, but made no indication he was going to leave.
"Mister, if you don't start walking, I'm going to shoot you," Danny said.
The man shook his head.
"This ain't right," he said.
Then he suddenly made a rush at us. Danny pulled the trigger an instant before I did, both bullets striking the man in the chest. The woman let out a blood-curdling scream and rushed toward him. She rolled him over, and I could hear the gurgle of blood in the man's throat. She wrapped her hands around his face and wailed as he said something to her that I couldn't understand. Her head dropped onto his chest as she lost control of herself. At the same time, the sound of ATVs starting to gain speed drifted through the night. I could see the headlights of the two machines bouncing along the dirt road. Thad was surely on one of them. The woman looked up, her eyes full of tears and snot dripping from both nostrils.
What am I going to do now?
She screamed, her body racked with sobs. I felt for her in a way. She'd just lost someone she obviously loved, but how could they kill someone over a damn can of corn and then try to attempt to hurt us, even after we said they could go? The two ATVs came flying up and skidded to a stop. Jeff and Thad were on them, and both were off and looking around before the machines even stopped, it seemed.
What happened? Thad asked, looking at the woman.
Danny relayed the story to them. As he did, Jeff walked over and picked up the can lying on the pavement.
How can you kill someone over a can of corn?
Believe me, we've been thinking the same thing, I replied. Thad looked down the dark road, and I could tell by the look on his face that he was beyond himself with the thought of such an injustice done to a family.
We should probably go down there and check on the family, see if we can give them shelter for the night, he finally said.
You think it's safe? Danny asked.
No more or less than standing here, probably, I replied. Besides, if some poor gal is sitting on the side of the road with a couple of kids and a dead man, we should try and help.
What about her? What are we going to do with her?
Jeff asked, pointing at the woman lying in the road.
I don't know, I said, looking at Danny.
We can't just leave her out here, Danny said, glaring down at her pitiful form.
It's not like she did it.
I looked down at her again, really unsure of what to do about her. In the end, though, she wasn't my problem. I didn't create the situation. I really couldn't care less what happened to her.
You need to move on. You can't stay here.
She didn't react, just sat there, staring at her dead husband. Stepping up, I poked her shoulder with the muzzle of my rifle.
I said, you need to go.
She looked up, a wet sneer on her face, but it was her eyes that I noticed. What I saw is hard to describe. Rage, hate, maybe terror.
You're disgusting. You just killed my husband, and all you can say to me is that I have to leave? What's wrong with you? What kind of a person are you?
She shrieked at me. I stared at her for a moment.
I don't know anymore.
One thing I'm not, though, is the kind of man that would kill another in front of his children for a can of corn. She looked back at the body of her husband. In a near whisper, she said,
It was an accident. It shouldn't have happened.
You're right about that. Now get moving before we find out if I'm the kind of guy who would shoot an unarmed woman,
I replied in a monotone, though I certainly didn't mean it. I just wanted her to go. She looked up at me, obviously unsure herself. Taking another look at her husband, she leaned over and kissed his forehead. Rising to her feet, she turned and started down the road toward Altoona. I watched her go until the night consumed her. It was so quiet. I looked up at the stars above, then back down the road. Thad's voice roused me back to the moment.
Morg, let's go and see if we can find the man he killed, Thad said, looking down the road. I can't bear the thought of a couple of kids sitting out there somewhere with their dead daddy.
Thad and I got on the ATVs and headed down the road, each taking a lane. The ATVs moved us along quickly, and it wasn't long before we were at the Pittman Center. It was a cool place. The little cabin was one of the few remaining buildings from the Civilian Conservation Corps days. It sat under a scattered canopy of oak trees right across the road from Lake Door. As we edged closer, movement caught my eye. I swung into the Lime Rock Drive, the headlights illuminating the parking area. The white drive was littered with debris dropped from the trees overhead, and the grassy area to the side of the cabin was a tangled mass of choking weeds and untamed grass. Lying at the edge of the mass, face up and arms spread out as if crucified, was a body. Beside this gruesome scene, a woman and her two small children were hunched over, all crying. They appeared to take no notice of our arrival. The woman was holding one of the man's hands as the two kids clung to her. Stopping the ATV, I stepped off and walked toward her, pausing about 20 feet away. I knelt down in an attempt to be on her level and not appear as a threat. "Ma'am," I said. She didn't look up, but continued to cry. "Ma'am, we're here to help you," I said, as I moved a little closer and turned on my flashlight, shining it on the ground. This time she looked up. Her face showed no fear, only anguish.
"Help? You can't fix this! They killed my husband!"
She began to sob again.
"Over a can of corn,"
she said, pounding the ground with her fist.
"I'm really sorry for your loss, and I can't imagine what you're feeling, but you can't stay here. Can we take you and the kids someplace safe?"
She looked around into the darkness, then at the kids.
"We were trying to find someplace safe. The fire drove us out of our neighborhood. I told him we needed to hide."
She started to sob again.
"But he said we'd be okay."
"Let us help you out. We can take you away from this. Get some food for the kids." She gripped the kids tight to her. A sudden change came over her.
"Why? Why do you want to help us? Who are you anyway?"
"I'm Morgan." I pointed back to Thad. "And that's Thad. And we want to help you because that's what people should do in situations like this. Not everyone is a predator." Again, she looked at the kids but didn't answer. I stood up. "I'll be right back." Thad had been keeping watch over us and the road. I walked back to him. "Hey, can you run back and get the truck, and maybe Mel or one of the other girls and bring them back? We can't leave her and the kids here, but she needs to know that she can trust us." Thad looked around. "You gonna be all right here?" "For a little while. But just hurry the hell up. I don't need any more encounters with creeps from the street." Thad nodded.
"All right. I'll be back as fast as I can."
"Please do." Thad jumped on the ATV and took off, this time running wide open. I walked back to the woman and knelt down. "We're bringing a truck. My wife Mel will be coming back with Thad as well." Mentioning Mel seemed to offer a little assurance to her.
"Mommy, I'm thirsty," the little boy said.
"Mom, why don't you and the kids come over to the cabin? Let's sit on the steps, and I'll give them a drink of water." She nodded with blank eyes, and I extended a hand to help her to her feet. She held the kids' hands as we walked over to the cabin. As we walked, the little boy said,
"My daddy's dead."
My heart broke. This little boy couldn't have been more than 5, his sister probably 3. At the steps of the cabin, I pulled out the canteen, spun the top open, and handed it to the little girl first. She took only a small sip from it and handed it to the boy, who gulped from it greedily, water spilling out and running down his chin and onto his Spider-Man shirt. "You stay here. I'm going to check this place real quick," I said to their mother. She didn't reply as she watched the boy drink from the canteen, just nodded absently. Shouldering my carbine, I flipped the weapon light on and stepped onto the porch. The door to the cabin was open, and it was obvious people had been living here at various times. In the small store, they had sold books and maps, topo maps of the forest. The books were scattered all over the place, with pages torn out and strewn about. Senseless destruction for no purpose other than the act itself. People amazed me, and suddenly I was hit with a thought. How long would it be before another book was printed? I quickly pushed that depressing thought aside and continued clearing the small cabin. Returning to the front room, I started going through the maps and books that littered the floor. I was surprised to find several of the maps still in usable condition. It appeared someone had lined the floor and slept on them, but they were still in remarkably good shape. I thought it odd that they wouldn't see them as a valuable resource with more uses than just a glorified pillow. Rolling up the maps,
I went back out to the porch. As I walked down the steps, she handed me the canteen.
Thank you.
Don't mention it. Have the kids had anything to eat today? She shook her head.
We were saving the corn. We were going to eat it tonight when those two people showed up. They asked if they could have some, and my husband told them he was sorry, but it was for the kids. The man got mad and pulled a gun. He told Lee to give him the can, and Lee said no, and the next thing I knew, the man shot him.
She delivered the description in a monotone.
I'm really sorry to hear about this. Where are you from?
We live just outside of Palatka. When the fire started, we had to leave, and we've been walking ever since.
What's your name? I asked.
Without looking up, she replied, Kathy.
Well, Kathy, just know you'll have a place to sleep tonight.
We sat there in silence, which was occasionally punctuated by the sound of sobs from Kathy. Soon the sounds of the old Suburban rumbling toward us were clear. It was music to my ears. Presently, the truck came into view, and Mel and Jess got out, along with Thad.
Glad to see you guys, I said, walking up to them.
Any trouble? Thad asked.
I shook my head. No, let's just get them loaded up and get the hell out of here. We walked over to Kathy and her kids.
Kathy, this is my wife, Mel, and this is our friend, Jess.
Mel knelt down beside her.
Hi, Kathy. Let's get you someplace safe for the night. We've got food for the kids, too.
Kathy looked up at her, but didn't reply. Jess knelt down as well.
It's going to be all right. You'll be safe.
As Mel and Jess got Kathy and the kids moving, Thad pulled me off to the side.
Let's get the body wrapped up so we can bury it.
He had a roll of plastic under his arm. I nodded, and we went over to the body and laid out the plastic. As respectfully as we could, we rolled the body onto the plastic and wrapped it up. Thad opened the tailgate, and we slid the body in. I told Thad to drive the truck, and I'd take the ATV back. At the barricade, I pulled up beside the truck. Jeff and Danny were talking to Thad in hushed tones.
Take them to my place. We've got the room, Danny said.
Thad stepped out.
You take them. I'll stay here with Jeff. It's our shift anyway.
I nodded and followed Danny as he drove the truck down to his place. Mel and Jess helped Kathy get the kids in the house, where Bobby showed them to the downstairs bedroom. They were offered food, but Kathy politely declined, saying she was tired and just wanted to be with her kids. Jess said she would stay there, sleeping on the sofa, just in case Kathy needed anything. As they were getting settled in, I told Danny in hushed tones that I would leave the truck there. We'd have to bury the body in the morning.
Both of them, he said.
Oh yeah, I guess so, I replied, thinking of the other one, still lying in the road.
See you in the morning, I said, as I took Mel's hand and headed for the door.
Mel and I crossed through the hole in the fence, walking quietly. She asked what had happened, and I told her the story. She didn't say anything while I replayed the events at the barricade and our trip down to the Welcome Center.
Over a can of corn? She finally said in a near whisper.
I squeezed her hand.
Yeah, over a can of corn.
Chapter 8. I was up early the next morning to the heavy smell of smoke. It was always worse in the morning, the dew holding the smoke close to the ground. Going outside, I could actually see the smoke now as it hung in the trees and moved in wisps through our neighborhood. We are going to have to call Sarge today and deal with the plan for fighting this fire. But first things first. I pulled on my shoes and headed over to Danny's place. On the back porch, I found Jess frying eggs, with Kathy and her kids sitting at one of the tables.
Hey, Jess, I said with a smile.
She smiled back and went back to tending her eggs, Kathy looked a lot better this morning. Looking up, she offered a slight smile. Good morning. Thank you for what you've done.
Don't mention it. It's the least we could do, I replied. I gestured to the pan.
You guys getting some breakfast?
Her face brightened a bit.
Yes, scrambled eggs. I can't remember the last time I had eggs.
These two should like them, I would think.
She smiled at the kids.
Oh, yes, they're going to be very happy.
You guys get breakfast down, and we'll sort out where you can stay later today.
Kathy looked surprised.
Oh, I don't want to stay. You're all very nice, but I want to get to my sister and Eustace. I tried to get Lee to go, but they didn't get along. But now...
She trailed off.
I'm sure we can arrange that. We'll work it out, I replied. While I was talking, Danny came out on the porch and sat down to put his boots on.
You guys sleep good?
Danny asked Kathy.
Oh, yes. It was really nice to sleep in a bed again.
Jess fixed 3 plates and carried them over to the table, setting them out. The kids quickly went to eating. Kathy looked up.
Are you going to eat?
We will in a bit. We usually wait until everyone is here. We prepare all our meals here and eat together, Jess replied.
Kathy pulled the plate toward her.
That sounds like a wonderful tradition.
I nodded at her, then looked at Danny.
You ready to run to the camp?
Yeah, but we need to unload the truck.
I nodded and looked over at Kathy.
Later today we will have a service for your husband if you want. It's the least we can do.
She looked up.
He's here?
Danny and I both nodded. We brought him with us last night. She looked back down at her plate and picked at the eggs with a fork. After a moment, without looking up, she replied,
Thank you.
Danny and I unloaded the body, putting it in one of the sheds for the current moment. With that unsavory task completed, we headed out in the truck. Tyler, Brandy, and the kids were coming through the gate as we went out. I stopped for a moment to talk to them.
Hey, Tyler, can you take a turn in the barricade in a bit?
He nodded.
Sure thing. I'll get down there in a minute.
Thanks. I'll see if I can get Fred and Eric to come down, too.
How's that woman this morning? Mel told me about it. It's just awful, Brandy said, shaking her head.
She's all right. Still processing it.
I looked at the kids. Having these two around will help. Give her kids something to do until they head to Eustace.
I'm sure they will, she replied with a smile.
We'll see you guys later, I said, as I pulled through the gate. At the road to the house shared by the girls, Thad and Jeff and I turned off. As I pulled into the driveway, the door opened and Fred and Eric came out.
Hey, guys, Danny said.
Fred yawned. Hi.
What are you guys up to? I asked.
We're on the barricade this morning, Eric replied.
Hop in, we'll give you a ride, Danny said.
After getting in, Fred asked, What happened last night? Danny gave them the elevator version of what happened, and the looks in their faces said it all.
You gotta be kidding me. They killed him over a can of corn?
Eric asked.
Apparently life is cheap now, I replied.
We got out at the barricade to talk with Thad and Jeff. Jeff was lying on the top log of the barricade, like a cat sleeping on top of a TV. Thad was standing out in the road, looking north.
It's getting worse, Thad said, without looking over.
We're going to go up to the camp and see if they can help us, I replied.
I'll go with you.
I looked over at him.
Aren't you tired?
No, I'm good. Plus, this is more important, he replied, as he turned and walked back toward the truck.
All right, then. Tyler is coming down shortly to join you guys. We'll be back soon, I said.
Good luck, Morgan, Fred said. I really hope that with all of us working together, we can fight the fire.
As we drove down the road, we passed a number of people walking south. All of them looked woeful, just weary souls slogging down the road.
As we approached a group of several people, a man jumped out in the road, gesturing wildly, waving a rifle over his head. I swerved off the right shoulder, only to see the guy raise the rifle. Danny screamed, "Gun!" and raised his carbine. He didn't hesitate and began firing directly through my windshield. Glass splintered around the cab, and the report was deafening, causing me to nearly lose control of the truck. The people on the road scattered, running for cover. I saw the man go down as I tried to regain control of the truck, swerving back onto the road. The truck fishtailed, and there was a sickening bump as we bounced over the man's body. When I looked in the mirror, the body was still rolling in the road. Thad was looking back as well. Then he looked at me in the mirror with horror in his eyes.
"I didn't mean to, man. That was an accident," I shouted.
"Doesn't much matter now, I guess," he replied.
Danny was looking back as well. When he turned in his seat, I looked at him, then at what was left of the windshield, then back at him.
"Dude, the windshield, really?"
He looked at me like I was nuts.
"What the hell did you want me to do? You were swerving to the right. I couldn't get a shot. Would you rather he shot at us?"
I know why you did it," I shook my head. "But look at it."
"We're still here, though," Thad said.
I drove considerably faster now, not wanting to give anyone the opportunity to fire at us again. As we neared the camp, a string of trucks was pulling out. I stopped beside the lead Hummer, where Ted was behind the wheel.
"Hey, man," I said as I stopped.
Ted was looking at the windshield.
"Are those coming in or going out?"
"Going out."
"Getting a little hairy, huh?"
"Yeah, the road is packed with people. Some of them needed a little persuasion to get out of the way."
"I see."
Ted leaned back and shouted up into the turret.
"You hear that, Mike?"
"Yeah, I won't have to shoot the windshield out, though,"
Mike called back.
"I would hope not. That'd be a hell of a trick from up there."
"Where's Sarge and Sheffield?" I asked.
"They're back at the CP. What's up?"
"We want to see if they'll help us with this fire," Thad replied.
"Go on in. You got any ideas?" Ted asked.
"Yeah, it might work," I said, and pointed at Mike. "And he knows how to do it."
Ted started laughing.
"You're relying on him to save your place?"
I nodded. "I think he can do it." Mike smiled and winked at me. Slapping the cab of the truck, Mike shouted,
"Told you I was a firefighter."
Ted shook his head.
"Yeah, well, I always figured you more for one to set fires, not put them out."
"I'm good at that too," Mike shouted.
Ted shook his head.
"See you guys later. We gotta get moving."
We waved as he pulled away and headed into the camp. Once again, the place was buzzing with activity. All manner of stuff was being sorted and stacked. Pulling up to the CP, we jumped out and went in to find Sarge, Livingston, and Sheffield in the conference room. I rapped on the doorframe.
"Can we come in?"
"Sure, Morgan. Come in, take a seat," Sarge replied. "You fellas look like you have something on your minds."
"We do. We need some help," Thad said.
"What do you need?" Sheffield asked. "We need some of your people to join forces with us to help with the fire," I said. Sheffield's head cocked to the side.
"You've got a plan to stop it?"
"We've got an idea of a way to try and redirect it. There's no way we can put it out, but maybe we can push it from spreading south into more communities."
"What are you thinking?" Sarge asked.
"I was thinking of a backburn to try and keep it from continuing south." Sarge nodded.
"That's one way for sure. Where are you thinking of setting it?"
I walked up to a wall that had a large map of the area. "I was thinking of starting it on the north side of this gas line right-of-way here. Originally, I was thinking of doing it here on 485, but I think this would work better," I said, putting my finger on the map. Sarge got up and came over, looking at the line, which cut straight as an arrow across the map. Sarge returned to his seat.
We're hoping the fire will stop at Highway 40. It might jump it, but we're hoping it won't.
We should find out today, Livingston added.
That got our attention.
It's already down to 40? Danny asked.
It'll probably be there today.
Damn, Thad said.
How much longer until you guys are out of here? I asked.
We should make our last trip today, late this afternoon, hopefully, Sheffield said.
What about the civilians here? Danny asked.
The ones left are hell-bent on staying. Won't listen to reason, Sarge said.
This place will go up like gasoline, Thad said.
We've told them. We've tried to convince them to leave, Livingston said.
I addressed the camp yesterday, told them about the fire. Some people decided it wasn't worth the risk, but many of them think that because this place is surrounded by sand, the fire can't get here. They think they'll be safe, so they're going to stick it out, Sheffield said.
They don't seem to understand that the fire is going to come from the sky. Enough embers fall in those tents, and this place is going up, Sarge added.
I shook my head.
Some people will never learn. But back to the question. Will you guys help us? I asked.
Sheffield studied the map for a moment.
How about this? He said, pointing to a forestry road just north of the camp. Let's start one here, on the north side of this road. It'll offer the folks here some protection if it works. If it doesn't work, we can use the same strategy on the line you indicated, to try and push it around your place.
That makes sense. We can work on it up here and see how it reacts, Danny said.
How are we going to light this thing? Sheffield asked, then looked at Livingston.
We got enough fuel to do this?
We've got a bunch of drip torches and some fuel. It's a mixture of diesel and gas, I said.
Where'd you get those? Livingston asked.
We found them, Thad said with a smile.
Sarge smiled broadly.
I bet you did.
When do you want to do this? Livingston asked.
We should do it before it hits 40. If it was to jump, the two could just merge into one, adding even more fuel to the bigger fire, Sarge said.
True. All right, we need to get organized for this. Sarge, you take command. How many people do you think you'll need? Sheffield asked.
Right now, not too many. Mikey has experience with this sort of thing, so I need him. Jamie, too. She's a firefighter as well. With Morgan's people and a few others, we can probably handle this for now. If it was to jump to the road up there, it'd be a different story, though, Sarge replied.
Sheffield nodded. All right, take who you need. He looked at Livingston. You keep track of what's going on with this, who's on the detail, and rounding up anything they need.
Livingston nodded.
Roger that. Mike is out on the convoy to the armory, and when he gets back, we'll pull him. He looked at Sarge.
Why don't you guys go see where it is? Let's get some intel on what we're dealing with. In the meantime, I'll put together a unit for you. When you get back, we can go over the plan.
We're going to try to get the last of this mess organized. I want to finish the move today, especially if this fire is encroaching, Sheffield said. And I'm going to tell the civilians one more time that we recommend them moving. There's no way that anyone should try and wait this out.
Roger that. And get those other boys ready. We're going to need to move on this as quickly as possible.
With that, we piled in my truck and headed north, crossing Highway 40. The smoke was now over us, being blown by upper atmosphere winds. As we got closer to the fire, the surface winds began to pick up. It was creating its own winds in order to feed itself. Before we got to Juniper Run, we could see the flames leaping 100 feet into the air. Stopping in the road, we got out and stared in awe at the spectacle before us. Sarge craned his neck to look up at the flames. After a moment, he said,
"You know, maybe we should just start the backfire back there at the highway. The road and easements on either side might offer some buffer."
"It might be better to try it way up here instead, since we're at least a mile north of 40. If it doesn't work, it'll give us more time for a second try," Thad said.
"If we're going to do that, we need to do it damn quick. That thing will be down there in a couple of hours, probably, Danny said.
That's why I think we should start it down at the highway. We just don't have the time to get set up here,
Sarge pointed into the woods.
Not to mention how hard it's going to be to try and do it in that mess. If we do it down at 40, we can just walk down the side of the road to set it.
I nodded. That's a good point. If we went out there into the forest, we could find ourselves on the wrong side of a fire in a hurry with no way out.
Let's get moving then, Sarge said.
On the way back to the camp, we discussed the plan. We'd go back and get the drip torches and fuel, while Sarge would meet with Livingston and lay out our plan. We'd ride the ATVs back and use them, riding along the side of the road with the torches dripping to start the fire. We'd started on both sides of Highway 19, using the grassy easements to encourage it to burn to the north. After dropping Sarge off, we hurried back to the neighborhood, only waving at the crew at the barricade as we passed. At Danny's, we got out and started to load the torches and their fuel, along with some of the other firefighting essentials. We had an assortment of tools that we thought would come in handy. Once we had everything loaded up, we went into Danny's for a fast bite to eat. All the ladies and kids were out back, the kids playing in the backyard. We quickly explained the situation, and I could see the fear in their eyes. Though I tried to keep my tone as light as possible. I didn't want to scare the kids. We scarfed down some food. I didn't know when the next time we'd be eating would be. And then we were on our way again. At the camp, Sarge was waiting at the turnoff with a couple of Hummers and some guardsmen. As we approached, they pulled out into the road and led the way. We stopped in the middle of the intersection of Highways 40 and 19 to discuss the plan.
I've never done this before, you know. I wish my dad were here. He's done a bunch of these for the state, I said to Danny as we walked up to the group.
Danny stopped and looked at me square in the eyes.
You got your daddy's spirit. We're going to do this thing.
We walked over and joined the group. Sarge was looking north toward the towering thunderhead of smoke. Pointing, he looked back at those of us assembled.
Gentlemen, he glanced at Jamie and smiled. And you, Jamie. There is no way in hell we're going to stop that. But we may just be able to part it, as it were.
He's right. There's no way we can stop this. We simply don't have the resources. But what we're going to attempt is to create a burned wedge of ground and allow the fire to burn around either side of it. Hopefully, it will bypass us.
Mike looked at me. Morgan, can you get the torches and other gear? I nodded, and Thad, Jeff, and Danny followed me to the truck. We quickly loaded the gear, and with the help of a couple of the guardsmen, carried it all over to the group. Mike picked up one of the torches and started talking.
Starting the fire is easy. Keeping it where we want it is another issue entirely.
He motioned skyward. This wind is going to make this very difficult. To start the fire, we'll ride down the side of the road on the two four-wheelers and drip the flame. Everyone else will be on the far side of the road. He reached into his pocket and produced a handful of OD green whistles on cords. If anyone sees a spot fire, start on the opposite side, blow your whistle. When you hear a whistle, everyone needs to get there and get that fire under control, then quickly get back to your position to watch for more. Understand this. There will be fires. They are going to start, and if we can't control them, we'll be overrun by them. So we have to be on top of it as soon as possible. Everyone understand? He was answered with solemn nods from all of us.
Morgan, you and Danny get on them ATVs and get this thing going while we get everyone else positioned, Sarge said.
I'll go east, I said to Danny.
He nodded, grabbed a torch, climbed on his Polaris, and sped off to the west. Riding slowly at the edge of the woods, the flame from the torch dribbled out onto the dry grass and palmettos. A quick glance backward revealed that the small flames were quickly growing. The small spots of fire were merging into a wall of flame as it burned into the woods. Far down the road to the west, I could see the smoke starting to build from the fire Danny was starting. The smoke from our combined fires began rising into the sky, creating another layer of smoke, dwarfed by the much larger head of smoke high above it. As I rode, I could see Sarge and Mike organizing the rest of the crew. They were being positioned on the side of the road with shovels, axes, beaters, and Pulaskis. Everyone looked on edge. While the fire was growing, it was still manageable, and so far, everything was going according to plan. But it could turn at any moment. With everyone in position, Sarge and Mike rode up and down the stretch of highway, keeping a close eye on the fire. Danny and I met at the intersection where the Suburban was parked. We traded the torches for a couple of shovels, just to be ready for any spot fires that may pop up. Sarge rolled up beside us.
"So far, so good," he said.
"Looks that way. Hope it lasts," Danny replied.
"We're just getting started. As things build, it's going to get busy," Mike said.
As we were talking, the first whistle sounded. Looking to the east, I saw some of the guardsmen running.
"Looks like we just got busy," I said, as I started the ATV and pulled away with Danny and Sarge following. We all got to work putting out the fire with shovels and other tools. It wasn't a big fire, and was quickly brought under control.
"That wasn't so bad," Thad said, as he wiped sweat from his forehead.
"Not bad. Good job, guys. Everyone back to their positions. This ain't over yet," Mike said.
"Sure thing, Captain Bringdown,"
Thad said with a smile as he started walking back down the road.
"Come on, let's get back down the road," I said with a smile.
Before we could get back on the machines, another whistle sounded, back toward the intersection this time. Just as with the previous one, several guardsmen were making their way toward the fire. Danny and I skidded to a stop and hopped off. This fire was larger than the last, and spreading even more quickly. We were tackling it just like the first one, but it wasn't working out nearly as well. Danny was beating the ground with a rake and looked up.
"This is going to be a long day."
"No shit," I replied, as I tied a bandana around my face. He looked at me.
"Damn, that's a good idea."
Reaching into my pocket, I tossed one to him.
"It is."
Mike waded into the mass of flailing shovels, axes, and beaters and started giving orders.
"Morgan, Jeff, you guys get on this side. Start raking the ground litter back. We need to create a break here."
He pointed to two guardsmen.
"Get on the left side and start pulling the downed wood out. Pull it away before it catches."
We worked frantically, as hot ash and soot were falling all over us. Thad appeared with a rake, helping me and Danny as we worked on the break on the far side. Mike had a Pulaski and was hacking down some brush.
"I hope it doesn't get any worse," I shouted, throwing a shovel full of dirt into the fire.
"Shit, this ain't even bad yet," Mike called back.
Over the clanking of shovels and rakes, another whistle sounded, then another. Sarge was standing by the road and shouted to Mike he would go check on it, to stay with this one. He quickly returned to the Hummer and headed back east. It took another several minutes for us to get the fire under control. It was hot, miserable work, and we were just getting started.
"Come on, guys, let's get down there," Mike said as he came out onto the road.
Danny and I got on the ATVs. Thad climbed on with me and Mike with Danny.
"Nah, I'm good, guys. I can walk," Jeff said with a wave.
"Looks that way," I replied with a smile.
We quickly made it to Sarge, and he waved Danny on.
"You two go check the other one. I think we can handle this."
Danny nodded and continued on down the road as Thad and I waded into the woods again. It was more shoveling, raking, and beating to get this fire under control. Then we heard another whistle, and another, and another. I looked at Sarge.
"This is getting out of hand."
"Thanks for the stunning report, Captain Obvious,"
Sarge snapped back as he walked back out toward the road. Sarge got in the Hummer and rode slowly down the road, checking all the locations where new fires were now being fought. There were a total of 4 spot fires now being fought. Sarge shook his head. Shit, he thought. Arriving at the fire where Mike and Danny were working with one guardsman, he got out and waded into the smoke.
Mikey, this shit's getting out of hand, Sarge shouted.
Mike turned around and looked down the road, wiping ash and soot from his face with a dirty hand.
I know, we need more people. We can't do this with what we have.
Sarge nodded.
Get this under control. I'll round up some more help.
Sarge went out to the Hummer and grabbed the radio mic.
White 4 Delta, White 4 Delta.
Go for White 4 Delta.
We're in a situation down here. We need more manpower. Things are getting out of hand.
Roger that, Stump Knocker. I'll get some people headed your way.
Roger that. You might want to impress upon those thinking of staying there that they should leave.
And send some water out, too. We could use it, Sarge replied.
Will do. White 4 Delta out.
Sarge was standing in the road when we pulled up.
What's the word? I asked.
Shit's starting to get deep. Just called in reinforcements.
I looked at the fire that Mike and the guys were fighting. I think we're going to need them.
I just hope it's enough, Thad added.
Me too, Sarge replied.
We fell in with a group of guardsmen fighting another spot fire. The drill was always the same. Try to pull fuel away from the downwind side of the fire, scraping the ground clean while cutting any trees or other standing brush that would allow the fire to climb higher. When the fire that the guardsmen were fighting was sufficiently corralled, Thad and I walked out onto the road.
This is starting to look dicey, Thad said.
Rubbing soot and dirt from my face, I said, I don't know how much more of it I can take. I'm burned up.
Yeah, this is some hot damn work, Thad agreed.
As we were talking, a couple of large trucks pulled into view at the intersection. Sarge pointed at them.
Looks like the cavalry is here. Hop in. Let's ride down there.
Livingston was at the intersection, looking the road up and down at the fires now raging on both sides. As Sarge pulled the Hummer to a stop, he came up to the window.
Jesus, Linus, this isn't good.
This looks bad, real bad.
That's why I called.
Where do you want them?
Send one east and one west. They can get on the line any place it's burning. Start getting them out. I'm going to go find Mike, Sarge said as he pulled away.
Driving down the road, Thad spotted Jamie with 2 guardsmen trying to get a line around one of the larger spot fires.
Let us out here. We'll go help Jamie, Thad said.
Sarge stopped the Hummer and we jumped out, dragging our shovels with us. Sarge drove off and we headed for Jamie.
Need some help?
Thad asked when we got to her. Jamie stopped and wiped her forehead with the back of her gloved hand.
Sure, but I don't know how much help you're going to be. I think we're in the middle of a losing battle.
Sarge called in reinforcements. They just got here, I said, as I started beating on the flames with a shovel. The heat was getting intense, the smoke, ash, and soot choking us as we flailed against the flames. All of our faces were black with grime, muddy rivulets of sweat running down our faces.
We need a chainsaw to drop this tree, Jamie shouted.
I'll go get one from the Suburban, I replied, as I started to run for the truck.
Out on the road, I got a better view of what was going on. Livingston did indeed bring the cavalry. I could see a couple dozen people, both Army BDUs and the uniforms of the refugees were intermingled along the line of the fire. One of the large trucks rolled slowly down the road. As I was pulling a chainsaw out of the Suburban, a voice called to me.
Hey, need water?
I turned to see 2 women in the back of the truck.
Hell yeah, I shouted.
One of them tossed a canteen to me.
When I caught it, I was momentarily stunned. It was ice cold. I ran it across my forehead, savoring the chill, then quickly spun the top open and turned it up. The water was so cold it hurt when it hit the back of my throat, making my head ache. Swallowing the icy water, I looked at the woman. Ice? Where'd you get ice? We have a big ice machine at the camp, so we brought a bunch with us. That officer guy thought you guys would need it. Can I have a couple more canteens? She nodded, grabbed them, and handed them over. Taking the chainsaw with my free hand, I ran back to the fire. As I came up, I handed Thad a canteen. He looked at it for only a moment before turning it and drinking it deeply. I handed another to Jamie, and the last to one of the guardsmen. Damn, you're a lifesaver, Jamie said as she unscrewed the bottle.
My lord, that's good, Thad said as he ran the cold bottle over his forehead.
Holding out the saw, I asked, What do you want to cut? Still drinking from the canteen, Jamie pointed to a pine tree on the edge of the fire. Which way do you want it? I asked. She jutted her thumb over her shoulder, indicating the road. I quickly started the saw and made my way through the smoking tangle. In a matter of moments, the small tree was falling back away from the fire. One more task handled. We worked for what seemed like forever. Gone now were the small spot fires, and there was now a continuous line of fire on the south side of the road. We were losing, and we were exhausted. That exhaustion reached dangerous levels when Jeff collapsed, simply overcome by heat and dehydration. He fell, standing between Danny and Thad, and the two of them quickly pulled him away from the fire, out onto the road. Sarge must have seen them because the Hummer was quickly there. I patted Danny on the shoulder, pointing out to the road. He nodded, and I ran out to check on Jeff. Livingston and Sarge were tending to him when I got there. He was unconscious, and Sarge was wiping his face with a wet rag. This just isn't working. We need to get everyone the hell out of here before we lose someone, Livingston said. Sarge looked at the line of flames on either side of the road and nodded. Yeah, it's time to call it. We can't control this. Looking at me, he said, Get him off the line. I nodded and ran back to the line, coming first to Thad. Sarge said to get everyone off the line. We're pulling out. Pass the word. He nodded, and we both began spreading the word down the line. It didn't take long for the word to spread, and people were quickly spilling out onto the road where the trucks were waiting. Danny, Thad, and I went over to the Hummer, where Sarge and Mike were still tending to Jeff, who was now resting against a tire of the truck, sipping from a canteen. Let's get everyone loaded up and headed back to camp, Livingston said. Sarge looked at me. We tried, Morgan. I know you've got a plan B. Let's hope that one works. As I looked back at the enormous fire, Mike came up beside me, looking utterly defeated. Mikey, what went wrong? Sarge asked. Too much wind, too much real estate, not enough people or equipment. It was just too big a job, really. What are we going to do now? Danny asked. Get the hell out of here to start with, Sarge replied, as smoke swirled around the truck. No shit, Sherlock, but what are we going to do about this now? This is out of hand. I would suggest you go home and get your people ready to move. Shit, Thad replied. Yeah, I think we're all in this shit now, Sarge replied. Jeff awoke, coughing and sputtering. Good to see you awake, buddy, I said. Can you walk? He nodded. Yeah, just help me get up. Let's move, people. We need to get the hell out of here before it gets any hotter, Livingston shouted. We're headed home. I'll call you on the radio later, I said, as Danny and Thad helped Jeff up. Come by the camp first. Fill up your trucks, Livingston said. I was surprised by his generosity, but accepted it. If we were going to have to get on the move, it made sense for us to have a full tank. We followed Sarge and Livingston into the camp, pulling up in front of the CP. Before I could ask Sarge about the fuel, Danny tapped my shoulder, jutting his chin in the direction of a man walking toward the bunker.
"Recognize him?" Danny asked.
I studied the man for a moment. He looked damn familiar. Before it came to me, Danny said, "Remember putting him in a set of stocks?"
"Oh, shit, yeah, I do. What the hell is he doing here?
Remember Mark took him off and disappeared with him?"
"Yeah, I remember him now. What the hell is he doing here?"
"I knew those guys were sent by the damn federal goons," I said. Sarge looked over to see who we were talking about.
"What's his story?"
"We caught him in a raid one night on our place. We had him in a set of stocks for a while, actually," I said.
"Before that deputy Mark disappeared with him," Thad said through the cab.
Sarge spun around and rested on the side of the truck, sucking his teeth.
"Well, that's interesting. What's he doing here?" Danny asked.
"He's the newly elected leader of these people," Sarge replied as he swept his arm over the camp.
"And a damn stupid one, if he's telling people to stay here at this camp."
I looked back at the man as he went into the CP.
"I'd keep an eye on him before you all go."
"Yeah, I'd watch your back if I were you," Danny agreed.
"That dude's going to be trouble," Danny muttered as we headed for the gate.
Chapter 9. Sarge walked into the command bunker and fell into a chair in Sheffield's office. Livingston took the one beside it. Sheffield looked at the two of them for a moment.
"You two look like shit. I'm guessing it didn't go well."
"No, it didn't. We lost control of it, and it's now on the south side of the road," Livingston said.
"We tried our damnedest, but it got away from us," Sarge added.
"So how long do we have before it's here?" Sheffield asked. Livingston shrugged.
"Hard to say, but not long. Not long at all.
You need to tell these people again to leave. They can't stay here," Sarge said.
"We also need to get this move done as fast as possible. We need to get the hell out of here," Livingston added.
Sarge shook his head.
"They're nuts. They've got to leave. If they stay here, they'll die."
Sheffield took it all in.
"All right. I'll speak with Neil again, but I don't think it will make a difference. As for the move, keep it rolling. Our orders tell us we have to be out of here ASAP. The fire only reinforces that fact. You two get cleaned up, and I'll get with Neil."
When Sheffield finished, there was a knock at the door, and everyone looked up to see Neil standing there.
"Got a minute, Captain?"
Sheffield waved him in.
"Just the man I needed to see. Come in."
"That's good news," Neil added.
Sarge looked at the man.
"You people still planning on staying here?"
He nodded.
"Yes, we do. Now that you've stopped the fire from coming this way, we don't have anything to worry about."
"We didn't stop it. It's already jumped the road and heading this way. I've said it once, and I'll say it again. You folks would be better off leaving here. There's just nothing out here for you. With the fire now certainly on a course for the camp, it's a death wish to stay here."
"There isn't a tree for several hundred yards around the camp. There's no way the fire will touch it," Neil replied.
"Plus, you're leaving us food and supplies. We'll be all right. Better than scavenging on the road."
"What we're leaving you won't last long. Neil, I urge you to look at this sensibly. You could have lives on your hands," Livingston added.
"I urge you to look at the mess you're leaving us in. Bunch of cowards abandoning the people, I say. I've come here to negotiate terms. What weapons will you leave us?"
"You're some kind of special dumbass, aren't you?" Sarge spat back.
Neil glared back at him.
"You are cowards. You're running with your tails between your legs, abandoning all these people."
He looked back at Sheffield.
"What about my weapons?"
"Your weapons? I thought they were for the good of the group," Sheffield said flatly. "When we're finished moving, I'll give you the key to the armory. Neil thought about that for a moment, nodding his head, then asked, What about those buggies you guys ride around in? Are you leaving any of those?
No, they're going as well, Livingston said. We're going to need some way to get around, and you've got several of them. Leave us one or two.
Neil, I told you, we were taking all our equipment with us. We'll leave you some stuff, tents and that sort of thing, but everything else goes with us, Sheffield said.
We're not leaving any buggies here to get all burned up, Sarge added.
Those buggies are pretty important to some of the guys here. They're not going to be happy when I tell them you aren't going to leave one. They might get a little pissed off, he said, with an edge in his voice.
Sheffield looked Neil directly in the eyes. Just remember what I told you. I hold you responsible for their actions. You, nobody else.
I'll do what I can, but these folks don't work for me.
If any of these people here start getting the idea that they're going to try and take anything or start any sort of trouble, just remember, we have more than enough capability to stop anything you're thinking about, Sarge added.
Neil waved a hand.
No, no, I'm not saying we're planning anything. Just that some of these guys are wanting a vehicle, you know, to make it easier to get water and things like that.
I understand. There's a lot of people out there that would like to have one of them, but we're not leaving them. You wouldn't have any fuel anyway, Sheffield replied.
Neil looked agitated and shifted in his seat.
What do you mean? There's fuel in those tanks out there.
And we're taking it, Sarge said, and pointed to the north. I know you can't get it through your thick fucking skull, but there's a massive damn fire coming this way.
Neil was getting more agitated.
Now this is bullshit. We're going to need fuel too. You can't just abandon us here with nothing.
Sheffield sat up in his chair.
First, we're not abandoning you. We told you to leave, and you want to stay. We're leaving you gear, but you're not getting whatever you want. It's our property, and it goes with us.
Neil snorted.
Your property? It belonged to the Department of Homeland Security. Your guys took it when you liberated this camp, he said.
We're done here, Sheffield thundered. We've got a lot to do, and I can't have you pestering us for more. Just keep your people out of our way, and when we're done, I'll give you the key to where your weapons are stored.
Neil sat there, not moving to leave.
Sarge stood up.
That's your cue to kick rocks.
Neil glared at him, but got up and headed for the door. As he went out, he stopped and looked back.
I'll be around when you guys are ready to leave so I can get that key.
We'll give it to you at the gate, Sarge said.
Annoyed, Neil asked, You're going to make me walk all the way to the gate?
Yes, yes we are, Sarge replied with a smile.
Sarge watched him go, then turned around to the other two men in the room.
He's going to be trouble. I've got a feeling leaving them here is going to create a pretty serious issue for the area.
Morgan and them boys said they've run into him before, Sarge said.
Livingston looked over in surprise.
Where?
Said they caught him in a raid on their place one night. They actually built a set of stocks and put him up in them. Then some deputy sheriff took him off.
Sarge cocked his head to the side.
You guys sure none of them federal boys decided to ditch their uniforms and fall into the crowd? That one sure worried about getting his hands on some guns.
Livingston and Sheffield looked at each other. Then Sheffield replied,
I can't say it didn't happen.
We need to sniff around. I'd like to know if he's something more than what he's representing himself to be, Sheffield said.
We have the database with all the refugees in it.
I'll go through it and see when he came in here, Livingston said, standing up.
Sarge shook his head and leaned on his walking stick.
I'm getting too old for this shit.
The runs to the armory were getting hairier and hairier. There were numerous civilians on the roads, and all of them saw the convoy as salvation. When the trucks didn't stop or offer any sort of aid, they became irate. So far, the convoy had been fortunate, and hadn't had to use force on any of them, save a few warning shots fired. However, closer to the armory proved to be easier. The sheriff and his crowd weren't an issue. They made sure to have the road into town open as soon as they saw the convoy rolling toward them. And the civilians here kept their distance, staying across the street at a minimum. Most of them loafed about in the shade, watching the new activity, while others sauntered up or down the road. Ian was standing at the gate to the armory when the trucks rounded the corner. Mike smiled at him and gave him the finger. Ian returned the salute. Mike climbed out of the turret after Ted shut down the Hummer.
"How's tricks?" Ted asked.
"We're busy, that's for sure," Ian replied, then shouted to the driver of a truck. "Pull up to the maintenance shop!"